This Talking Flutes podcast is kindly sponsored by Trevor James Flutes, making life sound beautiful. You can show them some flute love by following them on Instagram at TJ Flutes, Trevor James Flutes on Facebook, and at trevorjamesflutes.com. Hello everybody, and welcome this week to the first Talking Flutes Extra podcast of 2021. My name is Jean-Paul Wright. Well, we continue to live in strange times, don't we? However, with the vaccines now being rolled out, it is a race to vaccinate as many people as possible to enable the world to find a way back to some semblance of normality this year. As I speak on Friday, I need to look at my diary here, 8th of January, the government have vaccinated 1.5 million people in the first 3 weeks, and they say they're aiming very quickly to get to 2 million vaccinations per week. Now, we know how over-optimistic sometimes politicians are. However, this moment is not about grandiose statements from men in grey suits. We need this jab in the arms of people pronto. So I really do hope that the 2 million statement becomes a rapid reality. Not just here in England, but around the world. And that also the wealthy countries, as they begin to vaccinate a large percentage of their population, look outside their lands to the countries around the world where the people are suffering and they can't afford to buy expensive vaccines. We really need the world to come together as a whole before this dreaded virus can be under control, if that is ever possible. Now, I'm recording this from my home in Tunbridge Wells in Kent, as we have recently gone into our third hard national lockdown. And whilst we are able to leave our home for an hour a day for exercise or to pop to the shop for necessities, I, along with the rest of my family, are in total isolation for the next 10 days as my daughter has caught COVID and she is not well. So she is complete isolation from us. So in effect, we are in societal isolation at home and our daughter is further isolated in her room. So we are communicating via FaceTime, via WhatsApp, text, and occasionally via Zoom so we can eat together. Well, albeit her in her room and us around our table. So please, everybody, remember to take care with washing your hands, keeping your distance from other people, and for goodness sake, wear a face mask. My daughter is 24 years old. It doesn't just affect older, vulnerable people. So back to this week's podcast. Last year, and before the current restrictions and national lockdowns, I popped over to Dublin to see my longtime friend and professor of flute at the Royal Irish Academy of Music, William Dowdall. Bill, to those who know him, for the launch of some wonderful new short teaching videos. Before the evening launch inside the Academy of Music, we popped next door to a very lively Italian restaurant for coffee, cake and catch-up. As you can hear, we're not in the studio. We're actually in a Dublin coffee house. And sat opposite me is the wonderful guy, and we've known each other too long.
Centuries.
William?
Bill Dowdall.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, John-Paul. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Were you a year older, a year wiser?
No, I'm no wiser. I'm getting younger all the time, mentally. Physically, I'm getting older.
It's something about getting old, isn't it? The old bones start to creak and then the brain starts to disappear.
I never give in to any of that stuff.
Huh?
No, I deny it completely. I'm not getting older.
You just don't use it as an excuse like I do.
And ask my kids.
Right, but I've come over for a very special launch tonight of some videos, teaching videos that you're releasing, or the Royal Irish Academy of Music are releasing.
Well, actually, being very modest, it's thanks to you and Trevor James that we're releasing them. I had this notion. In fact, don't tell anyone, but 2020 is the 50th anniversary of me teaching.
Good grief.
Yes, and before anyone takes out their calculators, I was a teenager at the time. Something I'm going to mention later. Yes, it's my 50th anniversary, and someone said to me years ago, would you not write a flute method or something? And I kept thinking about myself and computer screens don't get along. It's like way too blank, looking at a blank computer screen. Anyway, if I started writing stuff down, it probably would end up as being about a page and a half, and that's it. So then, knowing full well that I can talk the hind legs off a donkey, someone suggested that we actually do a series of simple and very approachable videos about the way I think about teaching. Not highfalutin in any way, very basic things like tone development, vibrato exercises and all that. And I think we've done 14 so far, and they're going to be released, I think it's about two a month for the next couple of months. But it's thanks to you and Trevor James that they're happening, because you very kindly supported the whole venture. And I think it took about 10 seconds for me to talk you into it.
Yeah, because it's you. And the great thing about you, Bill, is that there are teaching videos online, I know. But A, you can't be a brilliant flute player. You've got a history
of... Give me a swelled head here.
No, you're a brilliant flute player. You're a great teacher. But more importantly is that when you... I've seen you teaching, and when you teach, you put it across very simply. There's no fluff. There is none of this sort of highfaluted, think about this and imagine this. It is, this is what you do. Get the fundamentals right first.
Well, I was very lucky that the one and only teacher I really had was Mo Sharp, and that's the way he taught. It was simple. You did it this way, and it worked. And if anyone wants to listen to some Cleveland Orchestra recordings from the 60s and early 70s and the 50s, they can hear Mo playing, and it's wonderful playing. And he's just presented it as a job of work to do, and then you take it artistically from there once you know how to play the flute.
And how do you find the teaching has changed from when Mo taught you?
Yeah.
So how are you now teaching your students?
Well, I talk way much more, maybe too much. Mo is very, when I say simple, he was not simple in any way, but it was very much along the ways of he plays and he showed that I play it this way. That was a great way to pick things up. I have vivid memories of him with me trying to keep up with him, lashing through Anderson Studies, which I hate, lashing through Anderson Studies with a lit cigarette between his fingers. And I'm wondering,
really?
Geez, we're going to get to the end or not, and we always did, yes?
He could actually play them with a...
He smoked and while he played, yeah.
Mind you, all you've got to do is look at the Leduc publishing, and there's more ease with that dirty great big pipe.
That's right, yeah.
Now, you were telling me a really interesting story earlier about syrinx.
Yes.
And breathing, and there's just a story about the whole thing on syrinx, which, well, I know you're quite passionate about.
Yeah, I love syrinx. I think, you know, it's an iconic flute work. It was originally written for Louis Fleury, and to be played as part of this play, I think it's Siche. And the play has long since disappeared, but it had quite a good run in Paris. And all Louis had to do was turn up for 3 minutes off stage, didn't even have to get dressed up, blow syrinx, and then paid and off back
and
to the bar. Yeah, so this was the best gig ever, so he guarded this music jealously. But of course, he wanted a few nights off now and again. So he taught it by ear to Mo's teacher, Georges Barrère, who happened to be either a young pro or a very advancing pupil at the time. So Georges Barrère learned it by ear, and then, of course, went to the States, I think in the 1910s or 1915s or whatever, and then was teaching over there. When the Joubert edition arrived, you see, when Louis passed away, his widow found the music, of course, great, few bob, you know?
Yeah.
And contacted the publisher, Joubert, who said, great, but we can't publish this without bar lines or breath marks, and no one will buy it.
Hang on a second, there was no bar lines or breath marks on syrinx.
No, it was nothing. I mean, it was just indications. And so Joubert got Moïse to put in bar lines and breath marks, and thereby hangs the tale. So when when Barrère first saw syrinx, he looked at him and said, look, this is not what I'm used to. And had quite a different, couple of different breathing suggestions, and some very good fingering suggestions, and that's the version I use now. Quite simply.
I didn't know that story.
Oh, well, that's what was passed down to me. And
so, what about the key signatures?
Well, they're a great pain. It's a great pain because yes, it's a key signature, and you've got to be very careful. I've done it out in landscape form. And so the bar lines are twice as long, so you'd be very careful when you're cancelling accidentals along the way.
And so people can find the original copy of the original on your own website?
Yep, on williamdowdall.com. And it's absolutely free. You press a button and out it comes. That the printing quality now has to be upgraded, so we have to drag it into the 21st century, which you'll see the gist of the whole thing. And so, some very nice fingerings in there as well for different colors, harmonics and all that stuff.
So when you hear Sirin, how often do you hear the original played? The way that you think the original was played?
I think a lot of people played really well. I don't think, and a lot of very good flute players take no notion of the bar lines themselves. A lot of good players don't make the bar lines brick walls like we shouldn't anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's played generally very well. It's just a few little touches. If you have a look, it even makes sense musically at some of the other breath marks that I put in.
Fabulous. Now, how long have you been teaching at the academy?
Oh my God.
Because you were principal of the orchestra. Symphony Orchestra for years.
I was principal in the Symphony Orchestra, between the Symphony Orchestra and the Concert Orchestra for 31 years. And at that time, towards the end, I had a half-time teaching post in the Academy and principal for the orchestra. And quite frankly, I didn't know where I lived. And so about, was it 20-odd years ago? Yes. I left the orchestra. And the orchestra were very good to me. I mean, they were very kind in giving me a lot of time off to do solo work. But it began... It began to get a bit too much, so the academy offered me a very nice job, and I took it. And that must be, nearly 20 years ago.
Did you miss the orchestra?
I missed it very much at the beginning. Yes, I think what I missed was I was almost institutionalized in that you show up on Monday morning, there's a pile of music that someone's telling you to play, and most of the time there's someone telling you how to play it, which used to annoy me. But after a while, I got used to it, and the freedom was great as well. But even having a bit more time is invaluable. You know the three reasons for being a teacher?
Go on.
June, July, and August. There you go.
That's when you do your playing. But you escape now, don't you? You escape to New Zealand every year.
When I did take the job in the academy, I said to the director, John O'Connor, at the time, I said, now, you have to bear in mind, I don't do Mondays, mornings, or Januaries. And he said, okay, so I don't do Mondays, mornings, or Januaries. Now, for a while, out of madness, I became head of faculty. And I did mornings and Mondays, but never Januaries.
Yeah, becoming head of faculty, you didn't do that for a joke, did you?
It was a moment of insanity that I repeated, because it's a three-year renewable contract. I'm half glad I did it, but I'm glad I'm not doing it anymore.
So do you feel more freedom now as a musician, as a teacher, and as a father, grandfather?
Father of five, grandfather of seven.
Seven now?
Yes. Right. So, great times. And we're all gathering down in Wexford now for Wexford is a town about an hour and a half from Ireland on the coast. And we have a house down there, a little house with seven bedrooms that holds everyone. and this is important, a bar. And a pool table, and a foosball machine, and a dartboard, all in a wing of the house. Is just
a bar.
The bar, of course.
With
tap? Yes, but then we come along with the keg, and 15, 20 minutes later, we have nice cold beer on draft.
This could only happen in Ireland, couldn't it?
Well, of course. What else would you do?
The thing is, everybody's musicians. All your children play instruments.
We're very lucky. Yes, I mean, they have good lives. I mean, a musician's life is not an easy life. I sometimes look at them and say, no, I don't want to use the expression "real job," but when I see how hard they work for very little return, I sometimes think. But they're happy and they're fulfilled, which I think is the main thing in life is fulfillment. The other money thing, it becomes digits in a bank account, and it's meaningless. My grandmother used to say, the shroud has no pockets.
But when you think how important music is, I read a great post the other day, which says, when you get married, you have music. To make you feel more emotional, you have music. Mm. When you die, you have music.
Yeah.
When you make love, sometimes you have music.
Right.
When you're happy, you listen to music. When you're sad, in fact, all our life is based around music.
Yes.
And yet, you go around the world and there's very few governments that are actually investing in music.
Well, it's a bit frightening. I mean, I was in Berlin recently and I was really astounded at how much music is going on there and how much music is government supported.
Really, in Germany.
Incredible. And go along to the Philharmonic, and on Tuesday lunchtime, which is free, you'll get members of the Berlin Philharmonic playing wonderful chamber music, and about 1,000 people are gathered in the foyer to listen. I'll tell you a story about, we were there, as I said, a couple of weeks ago. My cousin, who's a very good writer, said, I can't believe you haven't been to Berlin yet. So we went over there, and we went over there for about 9 days. Of course, you know, got to see the Berlin Philharmonic sold out. Zubin Mehta conducting. Now, to put Zubin Mehta into context, he was principal conductor of the New York Phil when I was a student. So this man is still still knocking around. Sold out, and even the night before, a couple of tickets popped up on their website, €106 each. Oh yeah, we'll go for it. Bang, they were gone. So I said, like, on the Thursday, I said, let's go along to the box office about 10 or 15 minutes early and queue up and see what happens. So there's a queue already there. So we get to the top of the queue like little kids. Any tickets out? Oh yes, we're putting extra seats out on the stage. The what?
Whoa.
So I was nearly as close to the timpanist as I am to you.
Not great.
And I sat, oh no, it was great. I was sat there, and it was rapturous and wonderful playing.
Who's the flute section?
The flute section is Pahud, which is wonderful.
Pahud playing?
No, the other fellow who was principal in Chicago. No.
Oh, no.
Sorry, no.
Oh, awful.
Edit.
Yeah, we'll edit on that one. Yeah, I'll cut back in.
He was one. The commitment of the playing of the orchestra, and the collegiality of it. You think all these fellas and women, and a lot of women in it now, are under huge pressure. They all came out. They all shook each other's hand. They shook each other's hands beforehand and afterwards, and they joked. And the bass section was something else. I thought they must have fed them raw meat at the interval. They were just incredible.
So they weren't. They were typical brass section of an orchestra.
Oh no, the bass section.
Oh, the bass section. They're not messing around, do they?
Oh, they weren't messing, but they were just so carried away with the music. It was just an engine from the back of the orchestra. The brass section were wonderfully refined.
That's the Berlin Phil.
Yeah.
I mean, how often do you get to an orchestra where the brass section refined, eh?
Well, I was very lucky in the 60s and 70s, growing up in Cleveland, with the Cleveland Orchestra under George Sell, and that was some refinement, wonderful refinement and beautiful playing.
Yeah, because in those days you had the famous Chicago brass, didn't you?
Well, we used to listen to Chicago brass and Cleveland woodwind.
So what do you aim to do more with it? These videos are really good, and I think they are going to open some eyes, and we'll provide some links at the end of this podcast for people to find them. But how can you take them forward?
Well, what I don't really deal with, I began to touch on phrasing at the very end of them, but mainly in a very basic way. What I would like to do would be, without sounding big-headed about it, maybe share some of my interpretations and why I reached a certain point, rather than just making a recording. I've quite a few nice recordings out there, but rather videos and saying, this is why I reached this conclusion about this phrase. Whether you like it or not, this is my approach and this is the way I do it. And of course, there are many other different opinions, and there should be different opinions, because many roads lead to good music making.
Absolutely.
Rather than one definitive. I think the most frightening thing I heard once was a particular conductor, won't mention any names, said, that's it, I've recorded the definitive Beethoven symphonies. So what, we all stop doing Beethoven symphonies? So there are many different roles. So I'd like to, in a humble way, show maybe the likes of Syrinx and maybe some Bach, and how I arrive at certain conclusions, and maybe demonstrate some of them.
So what would you do? Play it through and then chunk it and explain what you're doing, what you're thinking?
Yeah, I might even do it the other way around.
Chunk it first.
Do a little bit of expand, then play it through and see if I've achieved what I've said. No, it's really true. Because sometimes you go, oops, that didn't work too well. I think we have to be very honest with each other as well. That sometimes when something doesn't work, we just go back and try it, do it another way.
So when it comes to flute playing, and certainly flute teaching, what you're really hot at is the minutiae. It is not only the sound, it's the intonation. Your ear is phenomenal.
Well, I...
It is very good. It's very good. We did some testing before we came out to this coffee shop. Yeah, and you hear things, but you also instill that in your students, don't you?
Yeah, but also the academy is a wonderful place here, because my youngest student is 8 years old. We start from the very beginning. This year, I think I've started 3 or 4 students off from the very beginning. And we have a wonderful system here. I think the most important part of the academy here is our pre-instrumental department, where you start at 4. My grandkids are in that, and apart from my grandkids being in it, then they go from pre-instrumental into sort of a pre-wind group, which is recorder, but also introduce them to other wind instruments, and then on to teachers. And a lot of the, I won't say top teachers, but we all do make a point of trying to start off a couple of young people every year.
And how many academies around the world actually offer it? I can't think of any actually, because normally academy structure is you have to be at a certain level before you enter. You seem to cater for everybody.
We try to cater for everyone, but it's not a weakness, I think it's a strength. I think we have to be mindful that there's no real music education system in this country. I think there are wonderful people in hot spots around the country doing it, but there isn't a level of general music teaching in this country. That's why I'm very keen about these videos. They should hopefully provide a bit of support to other teachers that would like to look at vibrato and stuff like that.
Do you find it very Dublin-centric then, music?
Yes, along with Cork.
Yeah.
Now Cork is a very fine school as well, and I think we want to get out with these videos, and I think the follow-up for these videos will be workshops.
Yes.
To do workshops, and I'm sort of I use the word lightly. I'm sort of a socialist, and I think education should be as costless as possible, as free as possible. That's why, thanks to you and TJ, these videos are free. Absolutely and utterly free to watch.
Please, can't beat that, can you? Anything well, that's free, go for it.
All I can do is pay people to watch them then after that. So it's utterly free.
So, Bill, who's your favourite Irish flute player?
My favourite what? Sorry, it's getting noisy.
It is. Favourite Irish flute player?
Of Irish flute?
Yeah.
Matt Malloy?
Absolutely.
Oh, there are a couple of others coming along now, but yeah, but I mean, I'm not. There's a youngish fellow, Tom Durley, who's a great player. Now he was in an Irish group. He's a very good. He's got I hate the word classical, but he's been sort of classical side. But he's a great young. But he's in his 40s now. Flute player, up and coming. But he's mainly he's teaching. He's a school teacher, but then Irish music on the side. And if anyone is in Dublin. And they're looking for some real trad music.
Yeah.
They should hop along to Hughes's Pub on Chancery Street on a Saturday evening, and they have people just gather for a session. Some nights it might be not the best, and some other nights you've got world class.
I remember years and years ago you took me there.
Right.
I think I was ill the morning or during the night.
Well, you were very lightweight. You just didn't finish your second pint, which is a disgrace.
But it is. It's just. People just come up and they just start playing, don't they?
Yeah, just join in, yeah. That's real community music.
Real traditional music.
Real, just join in and play, yeah.
And it doesn't matter how good you are or how...
No, they only have a fear of Baron players. Let me explain what a Baron is. It's spelled B-O-D-H-R-I-N, but it's spelled Baron. It's a sort of a drum played with a two-headed stick. And if it's not played with absolute sensitivity, it's this horror. In fact, there's a joke. What's the best way to play a Baron? And the answer is with a Stanley knife. I just made enemies of all the Baron players in Ireland.
So you haven't really, apart from New Zealand, you haven't really sort of. You're very home shore based, aren't you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've
Christmas music. You've travelled around the world.
I've travelled around the world. I've done a lot of stuff in various places of the world, but I am very home-based. Yeah, and I think, I mean, I love being around family. I don't think I would have been suited to being one of those people who was on the road doing 40 or 50 concerts at a time. I don't think I could have hacked that.
And you're never tempted to pop over to London or pop over to America to one of the big orchestras there?
No, I was always happy to make music in Dublin. Mind you, if someone wants to invite me over to do a bit of teaching or something, I'll gladly hop anywhere, hop on a plane and come back. But I think it's possible to make good music wherever you live. And I think it's important that we always develop centres of music making in our own communities.
I would totally agree. And one important thing that you do, I know a lot of colleges do, is you're very keen on getting other flute players in to actually give classes.
Yes, yeah. I mean, recently we've had Michael Cox over, who was fantastic,
yeah.
And he and I got along like a house on fire, and we've had there was other fellow you mentioned earlier.
Paul Edmund Davis.
Paul Edmund Davis has been over. Wib has been over a couple of times. In fact, I hope to get Wib over again next year, or this coming academic year. We have Fiona Kelly, who's not a big name in the flute world, but she's a fantastic flute player in the Irish Chamber Orchestra, and I think she's in English National Opera now. She's hopefully coming in March to do a class. I hope she knows about it yet, but we've been talking about her. Maybe just know her. Fiona, if you're free, come over. And yes, and then of course we have the great Pat Morris,
yes.
Piccolo Pat, who comes over twice a year now and does a master class. And she'll be over on the 16th and 17th of December. And then again in the following term. And then interspersed with that, our own solo Piccolo in the orchestra, Sinead Farrell, who's a pupil of myself and Pat, comes in once a month and does piccolo. Because I'm very keen on the professional students learning piccolo. And my advice to all young flute players is learn to play the piccolo properly, not like me. In fact, my piccolo playing is so bad, our wind quintet once hid my piccolo before a concert. Seriously. And so it's very important for young players to learn to play the piccolo properly, because your first gig in an orchestra is most likely going to be second or third flute and piccolo. No one's going to waltz in first flute.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I did, but that was half a century ago.
going back a bit, you're just two steps removed from Barrera, aren't you?
Just two steps, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. It's two generations. Funny, because Barrera was quite old when he taught Mo, and Mo was quite old when he taught me. And I'm not quite old.
No, you've still got a great mop of hair on there.
Yeah, but it's white now.
Yeah, so is mine.
That's all right.
And I've got a beard.
That's all right. Distinguished. I gave up shaving the day I got married. Seriously.
So what single piece of advice, if you could give to a flute player that could be listening that is not sure of where they can go? There's only so many orchestral jobs, isn't there?
Mm. I think the thing now is diversity. Learn to play all of your instruments really well. When I say all of your instruments, I don't mean sax or anything else. Learn to play your flute, your piccolo, your alto flute, even your bass flute really well. Learn other forms of music, get into improvisation. I think the day of people just being in orchestras is waning. I think there's a lot more out there. Get involved in contemporary music. I've had wonderful times in contemporary music. The exploration. And, you know, sometimes we might play music that's not to our liking. But so what? Look at some of the amount of rubbish that was written in the 19th century. I mean, how many symphonies did Pierre Ney write?
Don't know.
Who cares? How many did Beethoven write? 9. But yeah. I think Pierre Ney or someone wrote 10 times that amount. So there was always this, there's rubbish, and there's two sorts of music, good music and bad music, no matter what genre it is. And learn to play in different genres as well. And don't be stuck up like me being so-called classical. I mean, my first recording as a teenager, really sad, Mendelssohn Symphony No. 4 with the Cleveland Orchestra. That's my first recording when I was 14 or 15.
Hmm? Well, that's not bad, is it? 14 or 15?
Yeah, but I think the answer is diversity. And the daughters play. They have a very, very varied life. I mean, daughter Lisa plays a lot between contemporary music and crash ensemble, and then Irish Baroque Orchestra. So there's a lot of them. The same with Jenny and Aoife. They're always doing different genres of music.
And you love teaching.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think that is one area people think, oh, if I can't do it, I'll have to teach.
Why not flip it
around, and like you do? You're so passionate about teaching.
Well, I think it's also important to have a playing life as well. And I think there was a period where I didn't teach. I think it was in my 30s, and I went through a sort of a phase. I was very busy with a young family. We'd started off the shop. And I was also in the process of sort of relearning what I was doing. And in fact, it's very funny, it actually came back to square one while I was taught in the first place. I just stopped messing around.
Yeah.
And it worked.
And I think that what a great way to finish. Stop messing around, find out what it is that you want to do.
Yeah.
If you really are passionate about the instrument, as you say, learn to play it properly, be passionate, be emotional with it, have it as your lover. Because let's face it, you spend more time with this tube than you do with your wife, girlfriend, boyfriend.
Jesus, that's frightening.
Isn't it? You spend more time with it.
I always say to my students, particularly the young ones, there is only one true mistake you can make, and that's not to make music.
Do you know, I can't end up on a better note. Bill, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
and I can assure you that the coffee and cake was really yummy. It was so yummy that we popped back for a glass or three of wine after the video launch that evening. Make sure you check out williamdowdall.com. That's William and Dowdall, Dowdall.com website, and download a free copy of the original Syrinx. The teaching videos can also be found on the Trevor James YouTube channel, which is Trevor James Flute. So thank you for listening to Talking Flutes Extra this week. If you've got any questions, then please feel free to contact Claire and me on flutepodcasts@gmail.com and also via our social media channels, which are Talking Flutes on Facebook, me at TJ Flutes on Instagram and at Flute on Twitter, and Claire directly at Claire Flute on Instagram and Twitter. So that's Claire, which is C-L-A-R-E. Claire returns next week with a really interesting podcast about prolific French composer, especially for the flute, Charles Koechlin, with the wonderful Nikki Woodward. So until then, stay safe from this dreadful virus. Wishing you a wonderful week ahead, and may your third octave F sharp be especially gorgeous. Goodbye. Talking Flutes and Talking Flutes Extra are podcast productions by the Trevor James Flute Company. For more information, visit trevorjamesflutes.com.